Hey, podcast listeners, you are going to love this conversation with Rocket Rob. Thermodynamics, oh, the death of naturalism.
Yeah, laws of thermodynamics, like you said, I mean, they are some of the most fundamental laws of the universe. They are universal, they're invariants, they apply everywhere. And by the way, that's a very key point that I want people to keep in mind. And they were created by God. And so everything in the universe must obey, adhere to these laws of thermodynamics. Thermodynamics is simply that. It's the study of the movement, dynamics means movement. It's the movement of heat energy. That's what that means. So it deals with the transfer of energy from one place or form to another. And so basically these laws just describe the relationships between various forms of energy and how they affect matter. And the key concept there is that heat is a form of energy corresponding to a definite amount of work.
Welcome to the Creation Today Show, where we bring together interviews with experts and solid Bible teaching. Your host, Eric Hovind, affirms the ultimate authority of God's Word, the truth of creation, and why it matters to you.
Well, it turns out God knew naturalism was going to be a thing. So he configured the most fundamental laws of science in a way that naturalism would be DOA, dead on arrival. Hey guys, welcome to the Creation Today Show. I'm your host, Eric Hovind. Today we have rocket scientist Webb joining us to discuss these pesky little laws that atheists and naturalistic evolutionists and people like that just can't seem to overcome. Now, Master Webb, he has two master's degrees. I mean, what else are you going to call a guy with two master's degrees, right? Master Webb worked in the Guidance, Navigation, and Control Department for several different interplanetary programs for NASA. I think that's really cool. Master Webb was the lead navigation engineer for the NASA programs such as the Park Solar Probe. That's the one that sent the mission to, like, touch the sun. I don't know how close they really got. We're going to have to ask him about that. And the International Space Station commercial resupply missions in 2001. Rocket Rob. Oh, that's another good name. I like that. Rocket Rob. He's a rocket scientist. His name is Rob. So he moved his family to Northern Kentucky to work with Answers in Genesis. So here's an apologist, a science writer, and a co-host of Answers News. Ladies and gentlemen, please help me welcome Master Rocket Rob Webb. Hey, Rob, welcome to the Creation Today Show, sir.
Great to be back with you, man. Yeah, Rocket Rob, that's what they call me. That's a pretty clever, catchy name, I thought. So that's
come on.
Yeah, and usually people just call me that rocket guy. They usually don't even know my name. They're like, oh, you're just that rocket dude that works at Answers in Genesis.
We got to change it from that rocket guy to Rocket Rob or something. I thought for sure, like, Ken loves nicknames. I mean, he's one of those leaders that loves nicknames. He hasn't Rocket Robbed you yet?
No, that's what they call me. They call me Rocket Rob. And so,
they do.
Yeah, that's what they call me. That's my nickname. But people don't always remember my name, so they just call me that rocket guy. They're like, oh, I saw you, that rocket guy that was on the TV and whatever. So it's okay.
Oh, that's
I'm
fantastic.
Getting there.
Well, welcome to back to the Creation Today Show, man. I got to ask, what's better, working at NASA? I mean, because I got to say, that's maybe it's just my imagination. That seems really cool, but it may be just, it's kind of boring and laborsome to just kind of work on that stuff. Or is it like, so what's better, creation apologetics or NASA? Like what's it like?
It's hard to say. It's really two different categories here. I definitely love aerospace engineering. I love rockets. I love space exploration, but I also love God's word. I love biblical apologetics. I love equipping, giving answers to help defend the faith and helping God's people. Really, that's what it's all about. And that's ultimately my goal. My goal is to try to go out and help other Christians, equip them with the answers, and also to preach the gospel. That's my number one goal. And I've actually not been a Christian my whole life. I became a Christian back in 2012, about, 12 years ago now, about a year after getting into the industry. And I mean, long story short, I mean, it's everything changed for me. So it's just been great ever since. So,
well, I have a feeling your impact, your outreach, okay, that's hard to say. I guess your outreach used to go to the sun, and now your outreach goes to eternity. Is that kind of how we should
look
at it?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yep.
So you worked on one of the missions that I remember seeing the news news articles come out back when we sent a probe that, you know, quote, touched the sun. Okay, how close did we really get to the sun? Like when you say...
Parker Solar Probe, that's a mission launched back in 2018. So I was the navigation engineer for the third stage. Usually we had two stages for this rocket. We had to give an extra third stage to give it that extra boost to go into the heliocentric orbit it had to get into. And at closest approach, Parker Solar Probe is going to get within about 3.9 million miles from the sun. Now, that sounds like a big distance, right? 3.9 million miles. But if you remember how many miles the Earth is from the sun on average, do you remember that number, Eric?
Like about 93 million, right?
93 million miles. So it's going to get within about 4% of that distance. So it's the closest object we ever had to the sun. We call it the first mission to touch the sun. It didn't actually touch it. It just went into the upper atmosphere of the sun called the corona, trying to understand all the solar energetic particles, the solar winds and all that. And what makes it so cool, though, is that it is also the fastest man-made object we've ever created. It's moving at the speed of 125 miles per second, right? So that's not miles per hour, but miles per second. So pretty fast. So, I mean, imagine just going from LA to New York at that speed. Wouldn't that be nice, right?
It'd take
20 seconds to get there if you could survive the trip. I don't think you could, but it's not here nor there. But yeah, pretty fun program to be part of. Yeah, make sure you guys just keep tabs on that. I believe it's going to make its closest final approach coming up next year in 2025.
Now, out of curiosity, do you happen to remember what kind of temperatures the probe is having to deal with that close to the sun?
Yeah, so on average, it's going to get within about 3,000 degrees. Definitely hotter than your oven is the temperatures. And I was a navigation guy, but I had some friends on the thermal team, and those guys told me that they could get the spacecraft down to about 80, maybe 85 degrees Fahrenheit. So it's 85 degrees on the cool side, 3,000 degrees on the hot side. So pretty amazing engineering went into it, for sure.
That is incredible. Wow. All of that to send a little bitty thing to the sun to tell us that the sun evolved by chance. Is that kind of what they're...
Pretty much what they have. I mean, sadly, that's how it is with NASA today. They are inundated by the evolutionary naturalistic worldview, and that's their goal. But obviously, as Christians, as those who stand on God's word as our authority, it's great that we're exploring God's creation in the heavens. Remember, God created the sun. He created the sun on day four of creation to be the greater light. And so as Christians, we should actually be excited for missions like this. We're understanding more about God's creation in the heavens. It's part of really of our dominion mandate to learn more about and just to be in awe of the glory of God. And so that's how I look at it, at least as a Christian.
That's actually a better approach than I have, because sometimes I just get frustrated. I'm like, why are we spending all this money just to try to prove evolution? And in reality, we are gathering data. They're just interpreting it through the evolution lens, and we're interpreting it through the creation lens. So I guess the data is what we're getting, and that's what's really neat.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. You got it, man.
Well, good. I'm learning, man. You're teaching me here. Okay, so I want to get into today these, I don't know, I think of them as these pesky little laws, but yet these are the most fundamental laws in, from what I understand, all of science, called thermodynamics. I don't know, I kind of want to say, okay, Rocket Rob, teach us, man. Master Webb, what do we need to learn today, my friend?
I like that. I think I'm going to keep going with that. Master Webb, Master Rocket Rob. That's what I'll go with from now on. That's pretty awesome.
And your degrees are in aerospace, right? That's what you're
doing. Yeah, aerospace engineering. I got a master's degree in astrodynamics and a master's degree in satellite navigation. So those are the two little fancy terms there. But anyways, thermodynamics.
Hang on. I did notice you've got what some people would call an ungodly item right behind your...
Right there.
Yeah, that one right there. You got a round globe there. I'm sure we're going to have somebody on the program say, you got that wrong, Rocket Rob. Are you wrong about that?
I am not. No, and it's actually me and Dr. Danny Faulkner, our resident astronomer. We actually, I think it was about a year ago, we did a whole 6-part series called Flatline. If you guys want to check it out, go on to our Creation Museum YouTube channel. We did a live program where we got to actually cover a lot of the biblical as well as the scientific arguments and refutations that you hear about all the time. And so it's just so sad because I meet more and more Christians on a weekly basis at the Creation Museum as well as the Ark Encounter that are really starting to buy into this flat earth myth. I mean, it just blows my mind that more and more churches and Christians today, it's interesting. I was actually talking to Danny about it. It seems like it's starting to go down in the atheistic communities, but we've been seeing an increase in the amount of flat earthers within Christian circles. So again, it's so important for Christians that we go out there, we get the answers that we need. And so speaking of that, Danny has a great resource if anyone wants to look into it, called Falling Flat. You can get it on our bookstore, on our website, and actually it answers a lot of the most common questions regarding the flat earth myth and all the other nonsense basically that they kind of promote. But sorry to derail us a little bit there, but
I'm so tempted to just say let's just go that direction, but thermodynamics.
Let's get back to it. So laws of thermodynamics, like you said, I mean, they are some of the most fundamental laws of the universe. They are universal, they're invariant, they apply everywhere. And by the way, that's a very key point that I want people to keep in mind. And they were created by God. And so everything in the universe must obey and adhere to these laws of thermodynamics. And so maybe this is the first time you're hearing this, you're thinking, thermal, what? Like, what is this thermodynamics you're talking about? Don't worry, it's not rocket science, or maybe it is. Usually in my industry, we have to say it's not brain surgery, because brain surgery seems kind of hard. But rocket science actually isn't that bad. But in a nutshell, thermodynamics is simply that. It's the study of the movement. Dynamics means movement. It's the movement of heat energy. That's what that means. So it deals with the transfer of energy from one place or form to another. And so basically, these laws just describe the relationships between various forms of energy and how they affect matter. And the key concept there is that heat is a form of energy corresponding to a definite amount of work. That's kind of the more technical definition. Usually in physics, when we say work, that doesn't mean like your 9-to-5 job. In physics, work means a measure of energy transfer. So anytime you hear that, that's essentially what that means. And so I think most people have heard of at least the first and the second law of thermodynamics, but most people don't know that there's actually four fundamental laws of thermodynamics. And so the first one is something that they call the zeroth law. Sometimes it's called the fourth law because it was actually recognized after the other three laws were accepted. And they call
like zero as in the number zero?
That's right, zeroth law. I know, it cracks me up. Us physicists, we're not very creative. And so zeroth law, and they call it that because it's the most fundamental of all the four laws. In a nutshell, basically just kind of lays out the concept of temperature and thermal equilibrium. So basically it states that whenever you have two systems that are in equilibrium with a third system, then they are in equilibrium with each other. Seems almost too basic, right? But it's actually very essential to the laws of thermodynamics, which then leads to the first law. And so the zeroth law and the first law, they kind of go together. The first law states that whenever energy passes into or out of a system, it's the internal energy, the fancy word there is called enthalpy of the system, changes in accordance with the law of conservation of energy. And you're thinking, what in the world does that mean? Well, in simpler terms, I think most people are familiar. It's just that matter and energy can neither be created nor destroyed. I think most people have probably heard that, conservation of energy. But it can only be converted into one another in an isolated system. It's very important you specify it's in an isolated system where matter and energy cannot enter or leave the system. And so practically speaking, what that means is that there can never be an increase or a decrease in the total energy that exists in the universe. Now, we'll circle back to that in a moment. And I should also mention, too, that since the early 20th century, we've actually known that energy and mass are equivalent. And so each one can be converted into one another per Einstein's famous equation. I'm sure most people have heard of E equals MC squared, where E equals energy, M is mass, and C is the speed of light, which actually means that the universe has a tremendous amount of energy if you just take a step back and look at it. And so that's kind of in a nutshell the zeroth and the first law. The second and third law are a little bit different. They deal with a concept called entropy. Not enthalpy, but entropy here. That's basically a measure of disorder in the system. Or I like the way that Dr. Jason Lau, to kind of borrow his term, he says entropy is kind of like the messed upness of the universe. You can kind of think about it that way. It's all the messed upness of everything that's happening. And so the second law basically
says
that.
We can measure this?
Yes.
We can measure how messed up we are?
Yeah, so it's a measure of disorder, I guess you can say. And the second law states that in an isolated system, the sum of the entropies of these, basically these interacting thermodynamic systems never decreases, or simply put, entropy never decreases. That's an easy way to remember it. So practically speaking, that means heat doesn't spontaneously pass from a colder body to a warmer body. It's always the other way around, right? A warm body to a cold body. So for example, the example I like to use is whenever my cold wife, whenever she likes to cuddle up next to me on the couch, she doesn't get colder and I get warmer. It's the other way around. I get colder and she gets warmer. And so that's kind of the second law in motion there. And so
what
over
is it
time,
about those feet, man? Those feet
I
are always
know
cold.
the
How is that?
hands and the feet,
The hands and the feet.
especially when you're laying in bed too. It's like, that's like the worst when you're laying in bed, all of a sudden you feel like that ice cold, like wakes you up and oh man. But and so over time, because of that reason, energy becomes less useful. And so entropy, a way you can think about it is it's basically a way to describe how unuseful energy is. And what makes energy useful is that gradient, that difference between two different things, two different locations, the energy differences, which, by the way, is how engines work and why engines eventually wear out over time. And so over time, these energy gradients, these differences will decrease. And so, which means energy becomes less useful over time to do work, to do more work. And that's why we see things rust. And that's why we see it, engines eventually go out. And so, simply put, more entropy means less useful energy. That's kind of the takeaway there. And then finally, the third law basically states that entropy of a system approaches a constant value as the temperature approaches absolute zero, which is the lowest limit of temperature there. So I think kind of the takeaway here is entropy of an isolated system never decreases, and that means the universe as a whole is continually running down, moving from order to disorder, because entropy of the universe must increase with time. And by the way, there are no known exceptions. This is a universal law where the amount of useful energy is always continually decreasing. Now, also, just to quickly clarify too, there's a lot of misconceptions among Christian circles today that, because we're talking about disorder, we're talking about things running down. And so a lot of people think entropy, maybe it came around as a result of the curse or the result of the fall. I just real quick want to clarify that point. Not all aspects of entropy are necessarily bad. There's actually a lot of good purposes for entropy. For example, it allows us to digest food, so we can take food and turn it into energy for our bodies. It also provides friction on the ground, so we don't just slide down hills. There's basically how we breathe air, going from high to low pressures. Even the heating of the earth from the sun, it depends on entropy as well. So there's a lot of good purposes. I think that's the kind of the takeaway there for entropy. So entropy was really was created by God during creation week, during those first few days.
Nice. So we have these fundamental laws. Okay, the zeroth law, equilibrium. If two things are e so, if one, two things are in equilibrium, and one of those is in equilibrium with another, then all three will be in equilibrium. Which seems, if A is A, and A are match, if there's another A, it's going to match. It seems pretty
Yeah, when A
simple and
and B are in
logical.
equilibrium, then when it's in touch with a C, then they're all in equilibrium. That's essentially what the law states there. Yeah.
Okay. And then the first one, that's the one that I've always looked at going, if matter can't be created or destroyed, we've got to answer the question, where did matter come from? Where did energy come from?
That's right.
And now I remember learning this in school thinking, but I can destroy matter, man. I've watched a house burn down. I've been in a campfire. I've watched the wood get destroyed. And they had to explain to me, no, that changed its form. That's what thermodynamics is. You've simply gone from wood to heat. Is that a right way to state that?
Yeah, like a really simplistic example I like to use with my kids is whenever we're camping, we're roasting marshmallows, you think about just that transfer of energy. So it starts off from the sun gives off sunlight in the form of heat and light. And so the wood will receive that energy and then create all these bonds within the wood. And then once we burn the wood, it breaks all those bonds and then releases that energy, which then gets transferred to your marshmallow, which then, heats it up. And then you eat the marshmallow, then turns that into energy for your so you can run around and jump on things and all sorts of stuff. So throughout that whole very simplified example, you basically the point is you just see energy transferring from one point to the other. Energy is never being created or destroyed in that whole scenario. And so that's kind of the key point. And most people, if you just take a look back and just think big picture, take a step back, you'll actually see that there's a contradiction between these laws. And scientists have actually known about this contradiction for a very long time, ever since the laws of thermodynamics were really established. If you extrapolate that both to the past, basically you're saying that while energy is conserved, right, the total energy of the universe doesn't change, it becomes less useful over time. Now, because we live in a universe created by God who is transcendent over creation, there's obviously no contradiction. So we can have both sets of laws operating simultaneously today. Obviously, it's not a problem for an all-powerful God. He's the one that upholds the universe by the word of his power. And plus, when we start with God's word, we know from the beginning, Genesis 1, God, he created matter when he made the heavens and the earth. And then he also made energy when he made light. And then matter and energy we know is no longer being created today after God said that he rested on the seventh day. So that's why we're not seeing matter all of a sudden coming into existence anymore after that seventh day of creation. But if you take a step back and just look at it, and it really does present a huge problem for the naturalistic worldview. Those who reject God and hold to a form of naturalism where everything is just natural law, you know, it's just time and chance acting on matter over time, it really puts them into a major dilemma. And so kind of the bottom line here is, the first law of thermodynamics, it essentially demands that the universe be eternal because you can't create matter out of nothing. Well, right. The second law of thermodynamics demands that the universe cannot be eternal, right? So you see that contradiction. And so for a long time, scientists actually thought that the universe was eternal. It always existed. So that was a way for them to basically avoid that problem of having to create new energy, which would have violated the first law of thermodynamics. But remember the second law, that everything, given enough time, all the energy of the universe will eventually become not useful. Right. And so scientists actually call this the heat death, they say, and in so-called billions of years from now, everything will the entropy will reach this maximum state. And so there will be no more useful energy left. And obviously, if the universe was eternal, we would have already been at that point. There should have been ample, plenty of enough time to actually reach that maximum state. And obviously, things are still working. We still have work as possible. You know, life is still possible, of course. And so the universe cannot be eternal. And so again, they're back to this contradiction. Well, which one is it? You're right. We can't have both. You can't, what is it? Have your cake and eat it too, kind of situation there. So
if we go back in time, the first law says it cannot be eternal. The second law says it can't be eternal. First law says it can't have a beginning, or it has to have a beginning because
the first law demands that the universe be eternal, right? Because you can't create energy. The second law of thermodynamics demands that it cannot be eternal. Otherwise, everything, all of the useful energy would be gone, right? Life would be impossible. You wouldn't be able to have engines, biological systems wouldn't work. And so they're really caught in this dilemma here. And scientists have actually known about this for a while, and they've been struggling trying to come up with an explanation. And in case you guys are wondering, how do you resolve this problem? I'm glad you asked. They come with all sorts of different rescuing devices. I mean, you just look online, look at some of the papers that they have. They got all sorts of different fairy tales and appeals to imagination to try to solve this problem. We obviously don't have time to go through all of those. I would say the most common belief, though, for most scientists is that the universe did have a beginning. So the universe is not eternal. So now all of a sudden they have to deal with, well, how do we create energy from nothing? That's really their main issue. Going back to the Big Bang story, by the way, I call it the story, not a theory, because theories require evidence. And so really the Big Bang is more of an idea or more of a story 13.8 billion of years ago. But again, that whole story of the Big Bang would violate the first law of thermodynamics. And so they come up with all sorts of unverifiable speculative ideas and how the universe could have come into existence without violating that conservation of energy. They got weird interpretations of quantum mechanics, fluctuations, and all sorts of different stuff with no evidence, by the way, at all to back up any of their claims. And so really, I think the obvious answer is that the origin of the universe was not a natural event, right? It's beyond the realm of science because it was a supernatural event created by our all-powerful God. But of course, those scientists who are not Christians, who subscribe to the religion of naturalism, they'll refuse to believe that, right? So they would rather contradict science. They'd rather contradict the laws of thermodynamics than to contradict their religious beliefs of naturalism, which really shows at the end of the day that this is not a knowledge issue. It's not an evidence issue. Really, it's a heart issue. It's a spiritual issue. They have an axe to grind, and they're at war with their God, because if they abandon their naturalistic beliefs of the Big Bang, then the only alternative is creation, which obviously that's not something that they want.
Okay, so you just went all the way to a conclusion. I've got some people, I think, that are going, hang on, thermo what? So some of you are going to have to rewind this and listen to this again, but I want to kind of go forward with even more explanation. So you got
not rocket science, Eric. It's all right. It's easy.
So you got to understand the first law saying matter should be eternal because you can't create it and you can't destroy it.
That's right.
So from a naturalistic worldview, no God creating it, you now have an eternal universe. Second law saying everything is eventually going to come to a heat death, which means the usable energy that we do have, all the matter and energy, at some point, it'll get to the place of equilibrium where you no longer have heat to transfer and do work or energy to transfer and do work to something else. And so once everything's even, given enough time, everything in the universe will go down to an evenness across it. And then no work can take place because you don't have heat from the sun to give to the plants to grow into wood, to use that energy or to have food to eat to create that energy. Eventually, you get to no more usable energy. That's kind of the dilemma, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Yep, that's the contradiction. That's the dilemma that they have to deal with.
And so then you said, so that means, and you kind of went, man, that was a cool little series there. You're like, that means this, that means this, that means this. That means if there's no usable energy left, and the first law means it has to be eternal, we have a contradiction. And you're saying the naturalist has no real way to fix this contradiction, and only inserting the God of the Bible, the one who is outside of nature, the one who says, I will hold these things together, I will create things in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Only by inserting a God to start the process of matter and energy can you overcome this contradiction. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, essentially what they have before them, they have two different options. They can either start with God's word. They can start by saying that there was a creator that created everything, or they can contradict the laws of thermodynamics. They have to contradict science in order to come up with their story, in order for their story to even work. And so obviously, because they're at war with God, right? They're rebels against God. They'd rather contradict science all day long, right? And so, it just shows what Romans 1 says, that they'd rather believe in anything as long as it's not the God of the Bible. And for a long time, I was in the NASA industry for about 10 years. And this is what I had to deal with time and time again with all of my colleagues. And even when I was in university, I mean, it really is inundated by the evolutionary worldview. We see it all around us, left, right, and center. And so that is their dilemma.
There are going to be some atheists watching, some naturalists watching that go, huh? Wait a minute. And I'm telling you, go back and listen to that again and listen to the progress from these two cannot go together unless you insert God, and then all the way to where we would be today, heat, death. Therefore, you must invoke God. I should have written down those steps because you went through them. So it was a really cool step-by-step thing showing that basically if you don't start with a Christian worldview, you can't think the way you can't have the laws that we have today. That's is right. Really where you ended up, right?
That's right. Yeah, they're trying to use these laws that are, again, like I mentioned in the very beginning of the show, they're invariant, they're unchanging, and they apply everywhere. It's very important that we remember those three things. And so I know some atheists will go back and say, well, maybe the laws of thermodynamics didn't apply at the very beginning of the universe, but you still road.
Save that. I want to talk about that right after we unfortunately, I'm out of time. I have to let social media and our television program go right now. Hey, Facebook, YouTube, podcast listeners and television audience, thank you for tuning in. I'm going to continue the conversation with Master Rocket Rob on the other side of this. If you want to watch the rest of this, come on over to creationtoday.org. You can partner with us and watch not only the rest of this, but every episode that we've ever done with all of our amazing guests. If you want to get a hold of Rob's work and his resources and his articles, go to answersingenesis.org, answersingenesis.org. He's also got videos on their Answers TV platform, answers.tv? I think it is.
Yep. Answers.tv. Thank you for that plug. Yep.
So please go check that out and sign up for Answers TV. You will get equipped with lots of great information just like this. If you're a skeptic and you're like, huh? Rewind, play. Go check out his resources on answersingenesis.org or come to creationtoday.org and let's get on the other side of this break and let's actually understand this in a powerful way. God bless you guys.
Everything I just mentioned is on our website. People can really look at those steps a little bit more in detail and have the words in front of them.
Next week, guys, I've got a great show for you. We are talking about the existence of the very foundation of the Christian worldview, Jesus Christ himself. Did Jesus actually exist? What's the evidence? We've got cold case homicide detective J. Warner Wallace joining us. You're not going to miss next week, Wednesday at noon. God bless you guys. I'll see you then.